Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Can wheat, corn, and soybean futures really march higher into the holiday season? We'll ask that question and many more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Dan Bossi of Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today are Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group in West Bend, Wisconsin, Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open the discussion with this question, and really it is what we asked off the top of the show. Can we really rally through the holiday season? Jackie Vakes.
Well, talk about rally through the holiday season. I think yes. I think can we hold the rally into the end of the year? That's the big question. I know when you look at the last 7 years, we've seen corn rally 22 cents from this point on and then lose 22 cents. So I certainly think that's a possibility, yes.
Jackie Vakes is with the Stuart Peterson Group. Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities.
Yeah, I think if we see the exports continue to be strong, we got some good technical indicators today, a close that was positive. So, yeah, I think we can rally. The question becomes, what do you do with it and where does it end?
And Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing.
Well, the bull had Thanksgiving. It looks like he's going to get Christmas, too. So, heck of a year here. But I don't know what's going to stop it. I mean, unless something dramatic happens somewhere, producers are tight-handed here. They're not going to be a big seller. We could probably see some weaknesses go in the first year just from transportation problems. There's a bunch that's been sold, and we got to move a lot after the first year, but trends up after looking at Friday's close there.
So, Chuck, what do we do with it, and where do you head after you've done it?
Well, I think part of it goes back to when guys need to sell. There's tax reasons and other things guys sell, but we've been scale-up sellers, and if you got grain you want to sell for cash flow, whatever purposes, go ahead and move it, and I think there's some attractive options that you guys could purchase out there to retain possession.
Well, I agree 100%, and I think that reowning is a really important part of it. You can use bull call spreads, get into a dollar spread in corn today for probably about 15 cents, gives you opportunity, and it gives you cash to work with.
Are you agreeing that we should reown as well?
Well, I believe you need to maintain some type of reownership, especially if you're pretty well sold out, because we've got to figure out where the high's at here this winter. You hate to miss it out. But overall, your risk's to the downside. When you visit with a producer and talk to them, right now they're figuring cost and they're figuring today's prices. If this market would turn south in a hurry, if we lose 50, 75 cents on corn and a buck or so on beans, a lot of these guys are going to be in a world of hurt with these higher input costs. So I think the prudent thing to do is go ahead, market some, replace it, or else do some put options, put a floor in. You need to do something here because your risk is to the downside as a producer, not to the upside.
And what kinds of things would you do?
Well, it varies from individual to individual. I could do a seminar here all day long, probably everybody else on the program, including Dan, to give you some ideas of what to do. But you can basically sell the cash, replace calls, buy puts. There's various things you can do. You need to find something that you're comfortable with and stick with it and don't get spooked out of it, because this is going to be a roller coaster market. One day we're all going to be bullish. Next day we're going to all be bearish. So it's going to be an emotional one.
So Jackie, the next question I have up is what happens on Tuesday next week when you come out with these numbers from USDA? Can you outline the report and then give us your assessment of where we are at this point?
Well, certainly. I think that if we're close to the expectations, when you look at corn, you know, they're expecting about 1.89, not much of a change from the November estimates. Wheat down from the November estimates and the lowest end being at the 262 level. I think that that's something that We could even come in tighter on, and beans, again, tighter stocks on beans. So I'd have to say that if we come in close to expectations, it's probably going to be right back to the same influence of the outside export markets, outside crude oil markets, and the U.S. dollar.
I thought the fundamentals kind of took over today. When you looked at the past few weeks, the beans and crude oil have been tied together in the gold, and today we saw a separation. So, Kurt, I thought that was kind of interesting to see those two take a different direction for a change.
Yeah, that's the thing in here. We shucked that the mentality off. We'll go back to play the day-to-day fundamentals here on these reports coming up. But I would say the way the fundamentals are unfolding here, we're probably going to see some tighter numbers as we get in these stocks and production numbers. But the main thing, too, is we've got to remember South American weather is going to be more of a factor as we go into 2008 because we've got a lot in the ground and there's some areas too wet, some areas too dry. It's going to be a market factor from day to day.
And speaking of numbers, we better take a look at the way things settled in Chicago on the week in the wheat pit this week. December contract, a high of 904. They're low at 846. The settlement price at 903.5. December, of course, is in expiration, up 30.5 for the week. July futures at $8.08, up 46 cents. I know, Chuck, that wheat is one of the favorites of one of your compadres there at Lafayette at Risk Management Commodities. That's Mike Zuzula. What do you think of the rally in the wheat pit this week?
Well, I think, you know, earlier in the past month or so, we saw a pretty significant break in wheat, and a lot of people were calling the wheat market over. But I think it's been left behind in a lot of thoughts that world supplies of coarse grains are one of the tightest in modern history, and that's really sparked this wheat rally when we come around here and look at the problems in Argentina, as Kurt mentioned. And Australia had some problems, two mediocre crops back-to-back. So until we build world supplies, any issues with the upcoming crop gets this market going.
Well, and I agree. I mean, when you look at the fact that consumption in the world has outstripped production in the world for the last 2 years on wheat, we're in a dangerously tight situation. And a big portion of the world, of course, is dependent on wheat as a food source.
You're shaking your head yes that this is all right. What do we do about it is the question, besides push the price of wheat higher.
Well, the trade's going to be on edge until we see how the northern hemisphere comes out this spring when we green up and see what type of crop we have there. There's a ton of wheat acres in the northern hemisphere, not only in the U.S., but, you know, Europe cut back on their 10% set-aside, so any type of business or crop concern is going to send this wheat crop prices, you know, higher. Once the trade becomes comfortable, then we can probably see it drift lower. So it's going to be a roller coaster.
This is not the one that we thought that would lead through this time period. Can it really hold the lead into January or even beyond that, do you think?
I think Jackie made a great point. People still like to eat bread and donuts, and a lot of people don't understand how critical it is. It really is an extremely critical situation that we grow a good crop. The world was used to, there's always going to be another crop coming, and we had big supplies, but we're down to basically extremely tight supplies, and we're very dependent upon what that crop does, and we have a good demand base built up, and they continue to buy.
Have you thought much about what that demand base is? I mean, it's not, I don't think, lack of acres or lack of production, because we're looking at more production next year than we've had worldwide, I think, ever, or we're looking at fairly large production. So is it the number of mouths that are rich enough to eat breads and crackers and cookies and all those kinds of things? Is that right?
Well, I absolutely think so. I think that we can't deny the fact that we're increasing the world population. The last I heard, at a rate of the size of a city of San Francisco every day and a half. That's a lot of people when you think about it. And I just think that but that's a trend, of course, that's not going to change. And so the demand for food keeps going up even though we have more acres.
December corn futures this week, $4 on the high, the low at 382.25. A settlement price 15 cents higher at 399.5. December contract for next year at $4.35, up 4.5 cents. I know there's been some cash sales of corn over the last week. Do you think that was a good idea, or is this thing just going to keep going up, Kurt?
Well, we feel you need to reward the market as we go. I wouldn't clean out the bin, and if you do clean out the bin, you might want to do some type of replacement strategy. The trade's probably going to stay firm or hold together here until we get a handle on acres this winter. That's going to be the big issue, because when you plug in the new crop acres and you tinker with yield a little bit, that moves that bottom line in a large amount.
Let me back up just a bit, and maybe one or all three of you, whoever wants to answer this, can. I'm a producer. I've got quite a bit sold. I have a lot of income in the 2000 crop year already, and I have a lot of corn, a lot of soybeans in the bin still, or one or the other, and I really don't want to make a sale at this point. I don't want to pay Uncle Sam that tax dollar. I'd rather move it till next year. What should I do? Should I go ahead and make the sale and then move it around as I can with my taxes 3 years out? I can move some of that income around. What kinds of things do you think a producer should do? What kind of things are producers telling you they want to do? And what are you telling them they ought to do?
Well, I think the thing that makes the most sense at this point in time is utilization of options. You can do a bear put spread. It limits your downside, but we don't see anything that doesn't say the downside is necessarily limited right now anyway. Gives you a solid position. If you've got extraordinarily good basis at this point in time, you could always consider using the Minneapolis cash index contracts to try and do something on the basis side of it. So I think that using the put strategy makes the most sense because it leaves your upside open.
And if you go out there, if you have bins, you can make those forward sales further on out. And then the whole idea here is what we're trying to do. You're in an unlimited risk if you're in the bin. You're basically trading the futures as the basis has improved. So what we're trying to all say here, I think, is go to some kind of known risk strategy with still potential, but don't be wide open at these good prices and good profits on your farm.
Well, a lot of guys have been buying new machinery. I've never seen so many guys go out and watch their combines come off the line. They got that fear to make sure it starts up when they go out there. But a lot of guys have been looking at these higher input costs, and it's been kind of scary. And so one way to sort of lock in the floor but leave your upside open is probably try to gain some more, like they mentioned, the put option.
Soy complex this week, January beans, $11.22, the high, the low at 10.68.5. A settlement price at 11.19.75 for the January beans. They were up 39.75 from last week. November beans next year at $10.53.5, up 42.75. That was an awfully good move, but maybe we probably ought to talk about meal and oil rather than soybeans. Meal rallied sharply on Friday. The oil gave way just a bit, I suppose, at one point. But boy, they have been really moving the marketplace, I think, over the last month or so.
Well, they have. And, one of the most favorite trading combinations that you see down on the floor is, buying meal, selling oil, or vice versa, unwinding of those spreads. That sometimes gives a false impression in the marketplace. If they're unwinding a spread, you might see some real pressure come in against the oil, perhaps, but there's no doubt that there's demand. I expect that we could see meal in the 350 range.
Well, it's basically crude oil taking the skids here. Malaysian palm oil taking the hit. We lost our value in the oil. So, Jack, right, we lost the spread there. They came back and bought the meal and sold the oil. Also, too, guys weren't covered in meal, and we're seeing some weather concerns coming forward. But the whole soybean complex is going to be dramatic exciting this winter. If you take the current supply demand balance sheet, you use the same acre, same yield, same demand carry into next year, we'll be deficit 150 million bushels of beans. And the trade's just now figuring that out about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and they're going to be kind of worried until they see confirmation we've got an extra 4 to 5 million bean acres.
I think the livestock producers have kind of missed out here. The ones we work with have not really booked their meal, and I think that's what you're starting to see. Those folks are starting to wake up and saying, well, gosh, I didn't think beans could go this high, I didn't think meal could go that high, but I've got to get it bought now because when you look at what Kurt was saying, next year could be real interesting.
December oats at 266.5. We're down 3. Let's stay with the livestock just for a bit. Live cattle this week, December contract a high at 94.47.5, the low at 93.65, settlement price at 94.02.5, 17.5 cents higher. The Jan feeder cattle at 105.95, were up 175. December lean hogs at 55.50 on the high, the low at 53.82.5. Their settlement up 57.5 at 55.47.5 this week, or recently at least. Chris Hurt, ag economist at Purdue, painted a pretty bleak picture for the outlook for the hog market. It's not pretty at the moment, but he suggests that if there's not a lot of liquidation in the next 6 months, that things are going to get really ugly in the hog market, maybe as ugly as 2002. Is he right?
I think so. And then you still have the dilemma, even if we do liquidate a lot here, you're going to have some weaker prices as that liquidation phase works through it. So The point, I think, to make to the hog producer would be, look out, there are some prices out there that are still attractive where you can hedge and make some money. So at this point, I think guys need to take a look out there.
Well, I think when you look at the whole picture, one of the questions we have to keep asking ourselves is how many hogs are actually in the hands of the independent producer anymore, and how much of that liquidation is going to have an impact. And two, I've heard numbers bantered around for hog exports possibly being up as much as 9% next year. And so, for the moment, yes, it looks tough. But
yeah, we feel that wild card's the export side of the equation there. I think there could be a ton of business had there. Hogs get cheap enough, you'll see some foreign buyers come
in. And then most of that coming from China. Does everybody agree that's the case, or from other places around the planet? Most from China. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Dan Bossi. He's with Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Old Man Winter wasted no time settling into the Midwest this first full week of December. Other than a few hours of mild weather last Sunday prior to the passage of a strong cold front, it has been a chilly week across the state of Illinois. Temperatures averaged 4 to 6 degrees below normal across most of the state. The exception was in far southwestern Illinois, where temperatures were about 2 to 3 degrees below normal. Precipitation for December to date is above normal in northern and eastern Illinois and near normal in the central and southwestern portions of the state. This has been an active week with weather systems crossing Illinois every couple of days. Snow covered the ground at the end of the week over much of the northern half of the state in the wake of two systems that moved through Illinois. Far northeastern Illinois saw snow pile up as winds blew across Lake Michigan, with up to 9 inches of snow in parts of Lake County. Unsettled and potentially messy weather will be with us this weekend through the early part of next week. Conditions will improve by Wednesday as high pressure builds in from the Rockies. After that, little precipitation is likely, other than perhaps some flurries late in the week in northern Illinois. Temperatures next week will be running near to below normal. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today on Commodity Week are Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Jackie Vakes of the Stewart Peterson Group out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Our guest is Dan Bossi. He's the Market Research Manager at Ag Resource Company in Chicago. Thanks for being with us, Dan.
Oh, you're very welcome, Todd.
Let's start with something posted to the Ag Resource Company website. An article posted to the site this week says, surging soy oil prices have put the squeeze on U.S. biodiesel producers. And then ask, and I suppose answers this question, though I couldn't see it, which I would like you to take up now. That is, what effect does price rationing have on U.S. soy oil inventories?
Well, we have raised our forecast for end stocks on soy oil based on the negative margins that are being endured by much of the biofuel industry or biodiesel industry. Bean oil prices relative to heating oil have moved out to such a levels, and the same can be said for diesel, where these guys just aren't making any money. It looks to me like the Europeans are going to end our splash and dash policy, so the export side of things looks rather dim. So we've raised our soy oil end stocks because of a larger crush rate, better oil yields, and the negative margins we're now seeing in the biodiesel industry back up to around 2.4 billion pounds. And so it's not like we have a shortage of soybean oil. The biodiesel industry is suffering. I expect it to continue to suffer, and these margins at some point have to change, which is why within the energy bills, the biodiesel board is trying to get, of course, a mandate for using biodiesel in starting in 2008 and the out years from there.
Well, what's the odds of that falling through there? Is that going to be a reality? Is that going to continue to help speculative inventory stay in the grain complex, you think?
I really think it has. I mean, most of my questions here today was they looked at the House passage of the bill and they looked at the mandated numbers on both biodiesel and corn, and people were figuring that starting in 2010 and forward, we need somewhere between 5 and 7 million additional acres per year. And so the Senate, of course, had trouble with the bill this afternoon. It didn't pass, but we are somewhat of the expectation anyway that renewable fuels, both biodiesel and ethanol, will be contained within the bill, and they will make some adjustments, but in a broad sense, how we get those acres beyond 2010 is something I think the market's thinking about in a macro issue, which is why in the last few days we may have divorced ourselves from some degree from crude oil and gold and those kinds of things.
When you look out there to 2008, Dan, how do you see the mixture of corn and beans when you bring up the idea there that maybe the corn price is high enough or bean price not high enough to draw acres to the beans?
Yeah, as an analyst, I'm having great trouble with the market right here because I'm not sure what means is how high is high enough. We've had this infighting between all of the grains, and I think we're going to plant somewhere around 218 million acres total for corn, beans, and wheat. That still falls short by 3 or 4 million acres, which means we rely on yield. But, you know, does 1150 November beans for 08 buy any more acres than 1050 might? I'm not sure it does. Nonetheless, the marketplace seems to be on this joyride at the moment in which we ever go higher. And I think what's happening more and more is that the short sellers are becoming tired and worn out by this ever-rising market. And so until we exhaust this thing and get the last buyer in place, it may be difficult to see much of a correction. And, of course, wheat just helped the overall philosophy here today. So in my work, it's hard to be either a bull or bear right here. I can't tell people to go out and buy 440 December corn of next year. I can't buy November beans at 1050 a bushel. And I have lots of trouble buying July Chicago wheat at $8 a bushel. But I also can't get in my selling shoes and say, okay, we're ready to see a big correction. I think we may have to get past December deliveries, get those expired, get past the report, and catch some good rain in the central and southern parts of Argentina before we can maybe talk about some selling into the end of the year and some cash selling for tax reasons at the beginning of the new year.
Well, you know, Dan, one of the things that we may have divorced ourselves a little bit from the crude oil market, but certainly one of the things driving this market is the export market. And as far as the American dollar goes, that's a big, big source for an increase in the export market. So, you know, what do you see as a range for the American dollar, let's say, over the next year? And what level do you think it's going to take before we really start to slow exports down?
Well, if I could maybe interject just a little bit, my export clients have slowed down dramatically in the last 2 weeks. The freight rate is really starting to get to them. Landed prices of corn in South Korea are now about $7.60 a bushel. Freight rates, of course, have reached new highs, now costing somewhere in the vicinity of $3.50 to $3.60 a bushel. And so my clients are suggesting to me that, you know, why am I importing this expensive grain when I could maybe be importing the value-added product itself? By that, they're saying pork or poultry or even in the case of the Japanese, which seem to be moving forward on beef in terms of age limitations, just doing it directly through the value-added product. It's much more efficient, and it's much cheaper. And so I think there's some pent-up demand that's getting filled now from the governments in terms of wheat, but I'm not as optimistic as I was on exports going forward. I think the Chinese have kind of slowed or filled up what they needed to do. I think a lot of the South Koreans have coverage on corn all the way out to May and June, and so I'm kind of looking for a stagnation or a slowdown in the export profile really from the end of the year into the first quarter.
You say you can be neither a bear nor a bull. What would make you one way or the other? And I guess really, if you decide that you want to be a bull, will you be a bull, a very large bull, like a buck or a buck and a half added to corn?
Well, you know, I think all of that comes down to weather. I have difficulty being a bear or a bull right now because of the importance that South American weather will hold over the next 4 to 6 weeks. We've got some dryness in portions of Cordoba and Santa Fe and western Buenos Aires, which I think needs to be resolved. Brazil looks to be in good shape, but this market's going to be on pins and needles, and I think difficult to see a sustained break until we get the all clear that we do have sizable crops and some additional export potential from our friends to the south. When that occurs, I think I can maybe engender a little more of a bearish argument. Up until that point, if you were to have some weather problems, you know, you just don't know how high is high in the bean market. And to some degree, we need at least a 23 million metric ton Argentine corn crop. Otherwise, U.S. corn demand will surge next spring. So I guess I'm watching South American weather. I'm not doing much in the markets right now because of the volatility and risk. I guess if I were to do anything, I guess the most attractive sale at the moment looks to me to be new crop wheat based on what I foresee in seedings coming up in the January report. But I think we need to have a good growing season in the South if you're really going to don bear claws, or for that matter, if you have a problem, bull horns. So it's no man's land to me.
Let's stay with the southern U.S. just a bit. And since you seem to have a pretty good pulse on what's happening in Washington, D.C., if we hold prices for corn, soybeans, and wheat high, certainly cotton and rice will suffer again. For the second year in a row, they will, I assume, rally. I don't know. You can tell me that. Will that be the case, or will USDA be pressured to release CRP acres? And if they do, can they release enough and get enough out of those acres to expand wheat, corn, and soybeans?
Well, you're right, Todd. I mean, I think if this energy bill passes in some of the form and it is in the House version, I don't see any other way than for USDA to make it easier to open the CRP. And with the Bush administration being in this lame duck position, and, of course, the Ag Secretary following out with him, I would say that maybe this summer or sometime before we start planting winter wheat, such a decision could be made. And we're going to need those acres going forward. And I think food inflation throughout much of the area, and I say that globally speaking, is a concern for most politicians. So short of the environmentalists, I think that will happen. In terms of rice and cotton, I think those plantings will suffer. I think both markets have some upside potential relative to beans. And I think double cropping following winter wheat will also be a favorite pastime of Delta and southern Midwest farmers as we look towards May and June.
Well, Dan, that's my question there on the double crop bean acres there. Have you been putting together some numbers or ideas how many more acres or how many more bushels of beans we pick up from double crop?
Well, we traditionally do about 3.2 to 3.3 million acres of double crop beans. We're thinking that number could maybe push up towards 4.4, 4.6 if the bean market holds in where it is right now. So to the clients we survey and we talk to, everybody's very interested in double cropping beans. In fact, I had a group in today from northern Ohio, and they were going to be doing it all the way up there. In other words, cutting their wheat and drying it down, like you would dry down corn, and then coming back and planting soybeans. So it's going to be a popular way of looking at farming this year. The revenues are quite good. The input costs aren't as big as corn, so I think it's something that'll be gaining traction as we go forward. The only thing I would tell those farm clients, though, is if they're going to do that, make sure they have some portion of that winter wheat crop priced here before they look at, you know, planting the beans.
What impact have you looked at the rising input costs? And they're sure to be much higher by spring on the planted corn acres.
Very short answer, please.
Yeah, rising impact, it is having an impact, but still, I got to tell you, most producers are very pleased with corn, and we would have corn seedings in the U.S. based on what we're looking at in early December, somewhere around 89 million acres.
Dan, we appreciate you being with us.
You're very welcome, Todd.
Dan Bossi is with Ag Resource Chicago, a company out of Chicago, Illinois. You'll be joining us in March for our All-Day Ag Outlook meeting, too, I believe, won't you?
I will be, yes.
All right.
You invited me back.
We'll look forward to hearing you there. We did invite you back. I knew that. Let's get a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with Jackie Bakes.
Well, I guess put on your seatbelt, because here comes the commodity market as much as I can say. You do have to reward good movements higher with cash sales. You have a lot of alternatives that are available to you in the futures and the options market.
Jackie Bakes is with Stewart Peterson Group, and Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities.
Certainly, we're going into a volatile time this winter. I think, as producers, you want to check out and make sure you cover your costs and make some money next year.
And Kirk Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing.
Exciting times. It's going to get more exciting time to go on, but you got to do your own thing. Don't listen to anybody else and get confused. Keep your blinders on and stick to a plan.
Our thanks to Dan Bossi, Chuck Shelby, Jackie Bakes, and Kirk Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. The other three, of course, from their own places. That is this week's edition of Commodity Week. Make sure you visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Have a safe week and be careful out there. It's going to be a slick one. I'm Todd Gleason.